Green leather, last day of bead shop. Ah, Chris's first Mother's Day tomorrow. Done out very amusing. That is certainly an ambiguous place to end, and suits us. So thank you so much.
Brown line.
I think it's in lines.
I think so, or something. It was great showing this thing.
Yes.
We both approached humor from wonderfully different ways. I had lots of fun reading and listening to and listening to poetry. And lots of fun in the text. The way that kind of comes sharply.
I have a question. How long did this take?
I guess about 4 years, though. It was a very unsteady process, and it didn't really end. The process didn't so much end with closure as thinking that maybe we had some kind of problem that we kept working on this and needed to move on. But about 4 years between the initial burst of trying to write it and finally deciding that the editing we had created for ourselves was getting dire and we should quit writing new things.
Everything your last piece was that performance pretty scripted or no? Pretty
the costume and the sound and the words, I know, but it changes every time. People's reactions, whether they're with me or not, whatever in the room. It's fun getting into the character's head. I guess the sound as a language, the idea of communication, and growing up with Spanish, it was more natural to invent words. There's, you know, between Spanish and English, and here it's in between the between. So I don't speak Spanish very well at all. My grammar is really bad, so in poetry I kind of invent hybrid sorts. And I'm not sure what to say about it. It's just, it illuminates a place I'm standing in that I don't understand, and it can help me kind of realize where I might be headed or something. It's a strange analogy to hyper-texting, where it's kind of like, it's a facet into the stuff, into the English. These other openings and portals that go in. I mean, I know what they mean, and neither will an audience, but at least it creates a possibility, like a window to go somewhere else. Yeah, actually, that one was written in Berlin, actually. And Lüberstrasse is like Lover Street in my head. And I don't know if that's real in German or not, but it sounded right. Lüberstrasse is, you know. And again, it's just playing with language and seeing where that goes. But hopefully there's a thread there, so it's not just gimmicky or something like that. Like it's who the person is talking in this kind of funny way.
but in English.
Did they read his finest books? I've never seen one online. I see various kinds of things, like the male or, the lesbian fiction.
There's nothing that requires a subscription. Spineless Books is a publishing company that tries to do a lot of put a lot of things online for free, and we've also published about 5 books with spines. And part of the challenge is to try to, when publishing a book with a spine, create an electronic translation of it. So trying to publish things simultaneously as artist books as well as in an electronic form is where the fun is. Trying to do more than make the electronic version just a repurposing of the same writing, but figure out how new media can create a new text object. The first book we published was 2002, A Palindrome Story in 2002 Words, launching the press on February 20th, 2002, which is 2002. So that book is actually 4 inches by 4 inches and has illustrations by Shelley Jackson. But they've been getting larger. But maybe you weren't talking about the size of the book, of the print run. Maybe I misunderstood your question. Anywhere from 12 to 500 so far. Depends on what we're doing and whether actual printers can help. Well, as someone who is like a professional writer who went to writing schools, I was told that my job is basically to sit by the mailbox and await the rejection letters, and have always found that unsatisfying. And there are many ways to make life more interesting. Performing your own work and putting your back into it is one of my favorites. The internet is certainly another. It's a chaotic and messy place, and full of junk, but it has no editor, as it were. No one will reject your work, so there's a place on it for everyone. And by extension, new forms of desktop publishing and print-on-demand technology also make it possible for small print runs of obscure books to take place. So technology is making it easier in some ways for writers to find creative alternatives to doing their job properly. And that's exciting.
Some poems that are kind of expanded upon. There's a lot of voices in the poems already. So I have a chance to work with a vocalist or just an editor to see how somebody interprets. Sure. I'll send them to you. I have, are they published? And they're not really published, but I have text that exists that has dialogue. I'm actually gravitating towards that a little more. Exploring playwriting a little bit.
Our class,
some of
the people in the class are working on
the
piece, but it's 7 layers of voice going on. sometimes I don't read it, it's actually,
Well, you know, sounds like Fluxus, some of the Fluxus work. Jackson Flow, some of that layering. Well, the thing with sound for me is that, especially growing up in Spanish and English, is that it helps me say what I don't know how to say with regular language and words and all that. And in practicing it, I felt this other meaning, this other feel from, it's like music of language. And so Kurt Schmitter, when I first heard him, it's like, you know, making words out of just consonants or vowels was like, whoa, it's kind of crazy. And I like that. I like that you can go there. So that's how it speaks to me. I think it's good to kind of let yourself lead meaning and create this other meaning, this other kind of lenses in a way. And take a chance. And it doesn't always work, but at least you're kind of out there ready to fall or something. And then of course there's listening to poetry in other languages that I don't understand, like opera or something. What can I get from that? And how does that shape my translation of what I'm hearing and witnessing and everything? So, yeah, sound is good. Sound is cool. It transforms the space, it changes, you know. Yeah, that's kind of what that piece is about. It's about, you know, because of my last name, you say, oh yeah, it's a Spanish kind of a thing. And I don't really write about I have just a few pieces about being Puerto Rican or something. I'm more about the process. I'm more interested in what happens with sound. And there's a certain sense of a nomad traveling and trying to find their way in the world and everything. And oh yeah, I come from this place, but that's not the main thing. So that piece is about not fitting into this box in a way. And I guess I'm hoping with that piece, kind of like, it's like you're letting out this information and other people can relate to the not fitting in of the box part. You know, like, oh yeah, I have my own way of being and I don't have to be a certain kind of, I don't have to follow the rules that are given me or something. So there's a certain sense of anarchy or individualism that I'm trying to like push out there, but I don't want to pretend to say, oh, you got to do this and this. It's more just like throwing out your shared experiences, and in the process, you know, you expand your own and the whole thing.
When you're talking about sound, though, you said you were trying to make a new kind of being and music, and it's probably just really associated with being and significance. Are you actually trying to build significance for the sounds, or like, are they trying to signify something specific, or?
That's interesting. I never thought of meaning as significant, but I guess that's an interesting kind of dichotomy in a way. I'm trying too hard. Like that's not quite, it's more just like, it's throwing it out there. And in the process, there are these chances, these windows that I'm throwing out. And the meanings are up to the audience, and it's up to them to see how much significance to put to those meanings. So I guess meanings would be more like translations. Maybe that's another definition of meaning. Because meaning is maybe weighted. So it's more like, this translation is significant. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, how you translate it, it's up to you. And I mean, this is a tangent, it's a hypertension itself. So does that answer? I'm not sure.
I don't know. Whenever I experiment with sound, I always see
But then the people, then... And, but that's a good thing, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe finding poetry or language in the mundane, if you take that a step further. Like, maybe that character in particular is living in this world that he's inventing. And in that invention, it's kind of like letting you have a chance to invent on your own. So that's where that significance comes in, where sound becomes something larger than just meaning. It's life. I mean, that's a little hokey, but it's beyond the person. It just is.
Yeah, unknownhypertext.com.
Okay, great. And yeah, I was going to say, I really appreciate it. I was quite erudite without ever being serious, which I thought was really neat. But I was wondering how long after you did all this did the compilation come out, the unknown compilation, and if that's only available for your website.
Did you say eruditic?
Eruditic?
Eruditic, yeah.
Eruditic. Yeah.
Does that mean an erudite, or?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a variant, maybe? The
gotcha.
I made it up, made this whole sound thing. Yeah.
Okay.
But, no, there's tons of name dropping, and Faber, and Bartholomew, and Dada, and it's all over the place, but it's never, I don't know, it's just earnest in a way that's very playful, which I thought was really, really kind. But I was wondering if the compilation was available, only through your website, or if I get it, just if I go to like Borders or something like that.
No, you can't get it at Borders. There's probably 10 or 15 copies left in print, and they're only available through the website or by knowing one of us. But I appreciate your comments. In general, my relationship to the academic writing world is kind of like an uneasy, addictive relationship. So I'll get a degree, and then I'll run, and then I'll try to get a job for a couple of years, and then I'll realize that isn't so great either, and then I'll go back and get another degree. And still one more I can get before it starts to get ridiculous. But yeah, the MFA program at Brown has, they accept a few people a year, like 5 poets, 5 fiction writers, 5 playwrights, and then for the past 3 or 4 years, 1 electronic writer. the idea of hypertext as a literary movement had a huge focus in Brown University in the 80s and 90s. What they've now moved on to doing as their curriculum is virtual reality literature, which is this, it's like a garage-sized room. It's called the Cave, and you wear goggles, and it projects a 3D language scape around you on the walls. So it's pretty spectacular, but impractical, and I wasn't able to go on to get a job as a professional cave writer after that. And, all the work I did in the cave, I wouldn't even know how to turn on, much less where they put it. There are, I guess, a few people in the program who believe in the electronic writing revolution, as it were. Chief among them, the novelist Robert Cooper, who has never done an electronic work of writing in his career, as far as I know. He just writes novels, but he has championed the cause and has fought many battles that I'm sort of blissfully unaware of to get the higher ups to make electronic writing part of the curriculum. At the time I went there, these battles hadn't yet been fought successfully enough that they could have hired a professor for me. So I did some work in the cave and did some work on my own. And since you asked about my feelings, I thought the way of categorizing things was kind of weird, because there was poetry, fiction, drama, which are all literary forms, and then electronic, which is a medium. So it wasn't clear what literary forms we were supposed to write in, and that, I mean, not that I needed guidance there, but it seemed like the way of dividing things up was sort of skewed, and it, as a result, there was a danger of more emphasis being put on the use of technology than on the use of language, and so it remains unclear in the case of many electronic writing projects what the language is doing and what the reader is meant to think or feel from it. So there's an uneasy tension there between literature and technology that I think will resolve itself in the long run. That sounds right. It definitely didn't belong to the English program.
Speaking of Brown students battling, do you have any comments about the Marcus Friends and shenanigans that are currently running rampant?
Are you talking about the article in Harper's?
The polemic, yes, the battle. The silly, silly battle that's now maybe being fought, maybe not, who knows? Yeah, I am talking about the Harper's article.
Ben Marcus wrote a piece of Harper's criticizing Jonathan Franz in his popular novel, which was essentially dumb.
Well, not just Jonathan Franzen, but the publishing industry as well. Maybe readers are not working hard enough either. But, you know, he praises Gaddis and Stein. It's more than just Franzen bashing, but not much more.
Yeah. There seems to be a schism in the fiction world, or perhaps all of the writing world, or perhaps all of the art world, between what is called commercial and what is called, in the writing world, literary, or sometimes in its extreme cases, avant-garde or experimental art. The metaphor system usually used by those who champion experimental art is the idea of art as constantly evolving from some lower form to a higher form, and the forces of commercialism and popular culture are preventing this evolution from taking place. But I find the entire dichotomy to be kind of boring and self-serving, and I never read that article. I'm more interested in knowing what writing can do besides be avant-garde or commercial. And I sort of feel that most great writing combines familiar as well as unfamiliar elements, and to come down heavily on the side of experimental or avant-garde writing seems almost forced.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, just as many holes and self-congratulatory pats on the back as you would. Just as those he was accusing.
And for the record, Ben Marcus is in charge of the MFA program at Columbia University, and he was published this article in Harper's, so he doesn't really speak on behalf of the punks.
Silly to begin with.
It's like Coke versus Pepsi.
Larry versus Magic, I prefer.
Is Guinness better in the bottles or those pressurized cans?
What is the website again?
Unknown hypertext.com. You can jot that down if you want.
Yeah,
good luck. Have a good flight.